Cedric Muhammad. You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Now, I'm going to read something from the book Closing the Gap, which are interviews of the heart, mind, and soul of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, conducted and compiled by Jibril Muhammad. Jibril is the one who did the questioning of the many, 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 many subjects that the minister answered in the book Closing the Gap. And I have said this before, it may be my highest honor. I'm not quite sure. Maybe the highest honor I've ever had. I was asked by Brother Jibril to write the foreword to this book, which I did. Now, who is Brother Jibril? To a degree, let me introduce the subject appropriate for my point of view. Now, in the beginning of Closing the Gap, Minister Farrakhan has a letter dated September 27, 2006. This is what Minister Farrakhan is saying. He wrote this letter to Jibril. It says, "My dear Brother Jibril," opens up, "in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, my dear Brother Jibril, may this letter find you in the best of health and spirit. I'm writing this letter to personally thank you and all of those with you for this wonderful book, Closing the Gap. I am sincerely hoping that those who would read this book will become enlivened by the spirit that motivated such a book. To the readers of this wonderful book, Brother Jibril has been my personal friend, brother, companion, and confidant for 51 years of my Islamic life. He has dedicated the better part of his life to the constant study of the word that Master Farad Muhammad gave to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as the means of the resurrection of an entire people and as a force that would close out an old world of evil and form the foundation of a new world of righteousness, freedom, justice, and equality, where all who live on this planet will live in peace and harmony, not for a day, a month, or a year, but for an eternity. I thank Brother Jibril for the questions that he asked of me, and more importantly, I thank Allah for forming the answers in my head and heart even as he was asking the questions. I thank Allah for putting it into your heart, Brother Jibril, to ask me these questions. I thank Allah for helping me to answer these questions in such a way that it might serve the purpose of closing the gap between the followers and their leader, but more importantly, in closing the gap of between us and Allah, God." Okay, now that's a portion of the September 27th, 2006 letter from Minister Farrakhan to Brother Jibril, which is printed at the very, very beginning of the book Closing the Gap. Now, here is my intro, which is a foreword. It's not an intro, it's actually a foreword, which comes next in the book. "For years, human beings have attempted to identify, quantify, and improve the quality of all of their relationships. Yet, by the words of the leading experts and scientists in every field imaginable, economics, medicine, politics, ecology, and others, the effort to accomplish the full identification, quantification, and perfection of relationships remains undone. Some of these men and women who are described as being on the cutting edge of most or most knowledgeable in this effort are searching for what has been loosely referred to as a theory of everything. It is, in other words, that which would explain everything about life, the universe, and their relationships, unifying the currently separate disciplines of the sciences of this world. A black man born in Georgia in the 19th century, first named Elijah Poole, then Elijah Kareem, and finally Elijah Muhammad, said and wrote publicly that he was taught the wisdom and its root that explained every significant thing about life, the universe, and their relationships. He stated on many occasions that what he was taught was not a theory. He said that theories were essentially guesses that could not be proven. Everything he taught, he stated firmly, could be proven. He physically taught in the public and through others in a special way for a time period that touched five decades, the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s of the 20th century. But he never claimed to be the originator of that which he shared with others. He said that he was the witness of another. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught that he learned what he did from another human being, whom he referred to most directly in the public by the name of Master Farad Muhammad. Master Farad Muhammad, he taught, was a man born also in the 19th century to a black father and a white mother in the holy city of Mecca, Arabia. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad also said that he met Master Farad Muhammad in Detroit, Michigan, in the United States of America, and that Master Farad Muhammad had been coming in and out of the United States for 20 years before beginning to teach black people in Detroit on July 4th, 1930. Their relationship in a most profound way began in their meeting in that very city on the night of September 22nd, 1931. That night, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad recognized that the words and actions of this man corresponded to certain words contained in the Bible regarding the coming of a human being who would have the power to permanently change life as we all know it and for the better. Their meeting, characterized by the realization of the identity of one man, Master Farad Muhammad, by another, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, provides the definitive reference point for those looking for the birth date of what is now known as the Lost Foundation of Islam in the West, more commonly referred to as the Nation of Islam. The meeting between Master Farad Muhammad and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in 1931 and the evolution of their relationship was part of a chain reaction of events that eventually included the attendance and participation of a young man, a brilliant and talented entertainer from Boston, Massachusetts, named Louis Eugene Walcott, at a Nation of Islam event in February of 1955, celebrating the birthday of Master Farad Muhammad. That annual event was called Savior's Day. It continues today as Savior's Day. Although they did not physically meet in the usual sense of that word on that day, that would happen in 1957. The nature of the relationship between the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the man to whom he would later give the last name of Farrakhan was clearly defined. In that same very same year, 1955, another young man, 3 years Minister Farrakhan's junior, and born in the very same Bronx, New York hospital as Minister Farrakhan, a brilliant student, a talented athlete, and a gifted musician, whose first name was Bernard, would also enter into a relationship with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as one of his followers. In January 1955, months after first attending Temple No. 7 in 1954 to hear the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he became a registered member of the Nation of Islam. Later that same year, while this young man, Brother Bernard, was working in a restaurant run by the Nation, he would meet or see for the first time this other young man, known at that time simply as Brother Louis. The two would become instant friends. And that relationship, although neither young man knew it at that time, would evolve and grow in a certain way for 22 years and be punctuated by a most significant meeting between these two yet again in a restaurant, but this time on the other side of the United States of America in Hollywood, California. It is September 1977, and both men have lived what many might consider full lives in the Nation of Islam. The Brother Louis, who joined the Nation of Islam 22 years prior, became Minister Louis Farrakhan of Temple No. 7 of New York City, serving a publicly recognized 8-year period from 1967 to 1975 as the national representative of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, functioning as his leader's spokesperson in his leader's physical presence. He is now 44 years old and seriously considering going back into the entertainment industry while simultaneously realizing an emerging desire to rebuild the work of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, which has now been destroyed. The Brother Bernard, who joined the Nation of Islam 22 years prior in New York, eventually went west and became Minister Bernard Kushmir of Temple No. 32 of Phoenix, Arizona. Living for 6 years in the home of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad from 1965 to 1971, receiving direct training as a theologian from him, even writing a book about his leader called This Is the One. Interestingly, Minister Farrakhan wrote a song by this same name in 1957 and sang it for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad at his 60th birthday celebration on October 7, 1957, bearing witness to his leader in his leader's physical presence. He, Brother Bernard, Minister Bernard Kushmir of Temple No. 32 of Phoenix, Arizona, is now 41 years old and seriously considering how to best help Minister Louis Farrakhan realize even deeper than he ever had before the unique nature of the minister's special relationship to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. The two men have not seen each other since December of 1974 in New York City, and they have not spoken to one another since February of 1975, when they last had a telephone conversation. a lot has happened since December of 1974. Now, I will leave you all in suspense. You can read the rest of what I wrote in the foreword to the book, Closing the Gap. For those of you that haven't seen the book, that's the cover. Let me give you another shot of it. Closing the Gap. So I wrote the foreword for that book. All right. That gives you some idea of who Brother Jabril is, but just a little introduction. The best place to get acquainted with his medical condition, cuttingedgeknowledge.org. We'll put as many of these up as we can at blackelectorate.com, and we have been doing so in linking to almost all of the, if not all the updates. I'm not sure. But go to that website and you can read aphasia 7, aphasia 6, aphasia 5. You can learn more about his condition called aphasia, which was the other point I wanted to bring up, how to spell aphasia. It's A-P-H-A-S-I-A, A-P-H-A-S-I-A. I want to load you down with information so you can learn more. Now, there's a website I recommend as well, the National Aphasia Association. That's at aphasia.org, aphasia.org. And I'll just read from their front page. It's a national association. It says aphasia is an impairment of the ability to use or comprehend words, usually acquired as a result of a stroke or other brain injury. What is aphasia? Aphasia is an acquired communication disorder that impairs a person's ability to process language but does not affect intelligence. Aphasia impairs the ability to speak and understand others, and most people with aphasia experience difficulty reading and writing. I had to say this again because a lot of people are just in state of denial, confusion, or ignorance about what Brother Jabril can and can't do. Again, aphasia is an acquired communication disorder that impairs a person's ability to process language but does not affect intelligence. He is as intelligent as ever. Okay? He's not in a coma. I just read you the update. You can read it again. Anything other than that is hearsay, conjecture, slander, innuendo, or confused thought. All right. Yeah, I'll take a break, let you all absorb that. There's a nice shot of him and the minister together. Nice picture taken from Savior's Day. Get the book, Closing the Gap. You can go to, I think, finalcall.com, the store, the online bookstore, I think, has copies of Closing the Gap. Finalcall.com is a store, online bookstore, very good, where you can get Closing the Gap. Julian Marley, 311 album reviews. Also, Floyd Mayweather. Got some audio on Floyd that I could not pass up. June 10th, 2009.
Cedric Muhammad.
That's me. Yeah, you know what it is. Julian Marley. This album's called Awake. This is the title track off the album. Let me let you get some of this.
For many years, we've been lost in our tears. When will we?
Come on, Julian.
We've got to. When will we awake? We've got to awake. Since we fought so many.
y'all listening. Our minds remain in shackles. I think he said, if we remain deaf and blind, we will never see the sign. Julian Marley's Teach.
When will we awake? We've got to awake. Hey. From dawn of time began, man has been looted by means of exploiting the land. Then they tried to close the open doors before we slip through. We don't know by now. Tell you, my friend, we'll never know if you stand subdued.
That's Julian Marley. Let me give you a little background. After a 6-year hiatus, Julian Juju Marley is back with his third album, Awake. The Ghetto Youth's Universal release, which he co-produced with his brothers Damian, Junior Gong Marley and Stephen Marley, drew inspiration from the spirit of Sadella Marley Booker, that's the grandmother, Bob Marley's mom, who died in 2008. Marley spoke to Billboard about maturing as an artist, youth on youth crime, and the family legacy that inspires his legacy. Billboard asks him, "Awake is your first album since 2003. Have you been working on it this whole time?" Julian Marley says, "Overall, it took me 2 years to really start and complete it. Before that, I was helping out with different Marley family projects like the Roots Rock Reggae Fest, Africa Unite, and working on Stephen and Damien's albums. I wrote and recorded Awake during the months in between and had input on everything from the rhythms on down." That's rhythms. Sing it, Julian. Put the guitar on him one time. Julian Marley says, "On my first two albums, I was still growing and still unsure about music. I ran into problems where I'd even written songs in a key that wasn't right for me. This time I found my own comfort zone and the songs are tailor-made." Billboard asks, "What is the concept behind the album?" Julian Marley says, "What's going on in the world right now is a sign of the times. In Jamaica, we say judgment time. Jobs are gone, there's violence in the streets, and everything that we want exceeds the money that there is. On the title track, I sing, 'For many years we have been lost in our tears. For many years the prophets have spoke, and still we can't find no peace of mind. When will we wake? We need to awaken the mentality of mankind.'" That's Julian Marley. Billboard says Stephen sings on Too Little Too Late, and Damien is featured on Violence in the Streets. "What's it like working so closely with your brothers?" This song is called Boom Draw. Boom Draw, before I give his answer.
"A boom draw of herb did by me bedside. Open book of scriptures, I man won't deny. Keep it high. The grass is greener on the other side. A good meditation, I mankind. Say me off it, catch up all a fire. Figure bundle sitting with strong. Me off it, send fi a rizla."
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
This album is hot. I can certify it, y'all. Julian Marley. Answer to that last question is, putting Too Little Too Late together with Stephen was a great experience. It was like we were playing a game of soccer. I don't know what to expect, but I loved how it came out. Junior Gong and I have done other collaborations, but Violence in the Streets is about how we see the violence in Jamaica, or really anywhere. In England, you have 15-year-olds killing 15-year-olds and no one understands why. It's because of lack of education. Billboard says, "How are you promoting the album?" Marley says, "We've been playing new songs from the album live since April. We did 3 shows in the U.S. in April in Mississippi, St. Petersburg, Florida, and the Jazz Fest in New Orleans. Now we're headed back to Jamaica to do a lot of promotional appearances and performances. Billboard says, are you influenced by dancehall and other contemporary offshoots of classic Marley-style reggae? Marley says, it's all natural. If I'm influenced enough to move my head and dance, then that's enough. The single Boom Draw is like street-style dancehall, but down-tempo. We are promoting Jamaica on that song. As an artist, I can be inspired by other music. That's how you learn. This is the song Boom Draw. He says this is a street-style dancehall, down-tempo though. Boom Draw, we have to get it. I could have fresh
or press it. You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Message sent. Your Africa's green as intelligence. The King of Kings I will represent. It's like Eastland, Westland, or New Zealand. Of a Boom Draw coming straight from Westmoreland. As we blaze it up, we see clear to progression. We no deal with oppression. Get your ball of fire. Pick up on the sin.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Forgot me a percent for your quarter. A little bit down. Me a percent for a lighter. Bigger bundum Babylon.
It's the new album Awake, Julian Marley. I was bumping this yesterday. Very nice.
Up and down, looking everywhere, trying to find me. Put me up in a me eye, I'm ready. Like a bird we soar, burn it up galore. Are you really sure? You can burn one more. You've got to be.
Rod Guignard says he wants the name of that website, cuttingedgeknowledge.org. Cuttingedgeknowledge.org.
It keeps me stressed from rise. Now I visualize extra through the lies. Cool and one observe. And mellow out your nerve, yeah. Well, me have to catch a ball of fire. Pick up on the signal, signal was strong. Me have to
say. Now, this cut right here is called On the Floor, Julian Marley. The album's called Awake.
Hey, I would say right now, feeling the vibes, feeling the vibes, yeah. Everyone's going crazy, crazy, in a good way. A lot of people dancing on the floor, and they're going crazy, crazy, hey, I won't deny.
I could not find a song I did not like on this album, no lie. Let me give you another one. This is called Rose Hall, Julian Marley, Awake.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
A woman who lived on the other side of town, where she would make prey of anyone that comes around. Her plastic world invites darkness, chains and birds. If you lay in her arms, she'll bite you like a serpent of earth. Cause she no kiss for no one, has no love under the sun. She's like the bell which all froze all. Don't play like a clown, she will weaken you down. She's like the bell which all froze all.
Let me give you one more. This is Just in Time. Julian Marley, Awake.
Thank you. just in time.
I want to acknowledge my man Shannon Bogan in the Thoroughborough. What up, Shan? Peace, brother.
Jah gives us inspiration in times of desperation. He is our everything. The King of life, he surely is. All the way from Genesis, created us in perfectness. Light
unto the darkness. You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Crumbled, he made us not to stumble, but led us through the jungle away. Just in time, just in time, just in time, just in time.
Now, I had to step in here now. I'm feeling the Julian Marley album on its own merits. But when you bring Mr. Cheeks back to the table, Queen, stand up.
Well, this one, you know, is one of those kind of ones, you know. It's some kind of, sometimes you dream about, you know what I mean? Yeah. I just want to let you know, man, you know, you mean everything to me.
This is a very intelligently market-friendly album, put together very well.
Oh, girl. Ooh. Wanna have a talk with you. Talk with you. Just to let you know.
I don't know if Tasha's still around, but is this Miami certified? I can see this working for South Beach.
To lose it, the way you push your body all on me, you're making me more horny. We out in Jam Rock, jamming on top of a mountain, and of course I'm drinking from a fountain. The red wine, outfits is me, cash is in green, it ain't the same routine. I love the time I spend with my lady friend. Take naps, then we wake up and do something else again. Like take a cruise, scuba diver, jet skiing. I'm glad when you opened up, you let me in. Besides, your looks are beautiful, human being. And we standing on the balcony, you seeing what I'm seeing from here.
Put the trucks on Mr. Cheeks. He brought Mr. Cheeks on the track.
Well, all this crime and violence.
It's called Violence in the Streets. It's with Damien Jr. Gong.
Vice of the one riot alongside Gang Marley, where some guy feel like Sessa, huh?
Hey, is this violence in the street? My brother's got no time to sleep. Said them can't find a job, cause they've got no credentials. Is this violence in the street? My brother's got no time to sleep. Said them can't find a job, cause they've got no credentials. What more do you ask for? Can't you see the world is in a disaster? Listen up, Mr. Moneymaker.
architect and creator. So me say, Mr. Money Maker, did you get your belly full? You take advantage of the youth them when the beer is full. Diligence and persistence, you have to use it as your tool. Driven dog, him losing bone, no greediness will do no good. Mrs. Money Marketer of things misunderstood. Your profit on the loss of life, so we're not living as we should. In the neighborhood, we have to wonder if they would issue guns on Sesame Street to little children if they could. Is this violence in the streets? My brothers got no time to sleep. Said they can't find a job, 'cause they don't fit the description. It's this violence in the streets. My brothers got no time to sleep. Said they can't find a job, so at night they kill and rob. They give us dreams and aspirations, then you turn us down, you turn us down. You build up community centers, then you break them down, then you break them down. I pray that you don't know exactly what you've done after you've been to slums and then you issue guns.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
The amount of carrot on your neck, it make a man a rabbit. And come and take a CO chain, you know a man a grab it. A man a jack, a come a dance, and a go home a cabbit. Come on a thief them pretty vehicle, and a pick them pocket. Woman a pewter road, and a give money man jacket. And a chain out them bank account, and have them cash a stack it.
I'm sorry, this album is fire. I might have to get his 5 crescents out of 5. Let me give you another cut. Stay with me. Julian Marley. It's a hot album. And I like how it crosses genres. Hip-hop, R&B, dancehall, culture.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Hey, her love means more to me than silver and gold. And how I need her, and she may never know. She said she loves me, but she can't take the pace.
We're headed into hour number 5. I'm gonna read the letter that was written to me. Got a letter from Brooklyn. Ronald Crenshaw from Brooklyn. He has a problem with one of my blogs on CedricMuhammad.com. So he wrote me a nice long letter. I'm going to read it. Also give a quick critique of President Obama's speech to the Islamic world. So far, Snoop is ahead of President Obama, and who can give the greetings better?
And now she's telling me that she thinks we've grown cold. Deep down inside somewhere, I can't let her know. It's eating me up inside, and I just cannot go home. So
we can write about flowers and beads and birds and trees and lovers in a park and all them something there. But what do you say you ever write about them something there? When if you sit down late in the park at night, man come and shoot you and take away your man and rape her. What do you say you ever write about flowers when the air pollution wither it up? Right now the reality out there different. We have to write about South Africa, the youth them at the ghetto. We have to write about the England. We have to write about all these things.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel. tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Babylon, 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 which I know.
Cedric Muhammad on the Black Coffee Channel. Cedric Muhammad on the Black Coffee Channel.
That's right. I went from Julian Marley to Peter Tosh to 311. This is the new 311 album, Uplifter. We almost went on tour with 311, 1997, Wu-Tang. 311 has a reggae influence. I think Ziggy Marley was on tour with 311. The song is called Hey You. Let me use 311 as a bed. I got in my hands here a letter dated May 22nd, 2009, postmarked, postdated May 29th, 2009, from Mr. Ronald Crenshaw. He writes, "As I read, Obama triangulates while his bass only murmurs," by Cedric Muhammad. "I find myself extremely perplexed. He says, my first question is, if one knows the meaning of culture, how can one assume culture can override political ideologies? It is true that politics is an aspect of culture. However, politics has the power to direct the path of culture. For example, the morality of Christianity and its love of humanity did not stop Christians from oppressing Africans into chattel slavery. And later, the North and South had to fight a 4-year bloody war to discontinue chattel slavery due to the advent of industrialization. It should also be noted that cultural behavior could change irrespective of morality as economic pressures take hold. This shows the force of politics and the agency of economics to direct culture. Again, this is Ronald Crenshaw writing me in response to one of my blogs, Obama Triangulates While His Base Only Murmurs. Mr. Crenshaw continues, in using Obama's answer to Andre Showell's question as his of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act will administer only $1.6 billion for infrastructure improvement, and it will be put in the hands of big business who will take their profits off the top. It does give workers extensions on their unemployment insurance, Medicaid, and Medicare, but this doesn't give them a solid public works project which can remain viable until the economy picks up again. However, this still falls very short of giving workers national health insurance, which would cost the government approximately $1 trillion or $1,259 billion. As things stand with the Recovery Act, we can only stay in place and descend further as the economy erodes. I generally agree with what I'm reading so far. This is Ronald Crenshaw critiquing one of my blogs. He says, I'm also amazed as to why Cedric never mentioned Obama's facilitation of Bush's programs of TARP, the Troubled Asset Relief Program, and TALF, the Term Asset-Backed Securities Loan Facility. These two programs have started out costing the taxpayers well over $1 trillion. And let me say this. I never saw one banker force Bush or Obama into creating these programs. And I must go further, because Treasury Secretary Geithner personally announced he was making a capital infusion of over $2 trillion into the coffers of the largest banks. As I recall, the public or Congress was never asked whether they were in consent. Mind you, if a capitalist enterprise is too big to fail and has extreme authority, one could say oligarchic position. What Cedric is doing is blaming the victim. Black leadership does not wield enough power to achieve their goals. If Cedric looked closer, he would see that no citizen group sets policy in this country, only the legislature and the executive. Cedric goes further in bearing his naivete when he assumes that the Israeli lobby forced the U.S. to do their bidding. One has to take note that the United States gives Israel $5 billion a year free. Remember the old saying, he who pays the piper calls the tunes. Obama's refusal to attend the conference against racism and Zionism is merely a continuation of a long-standing support for Israel, no intention of paying reparation to African Americans. Obama continues to overlook the Bush administration's misdeeds. He refuses to indict the mandate to torture, wiretapping, and in superimposing of our Bill of Rights with the U.S. Patriot Act and several others that have followed it. This too violates our Constitution. Let's take this a step further. There is no two-party system here. It is one party with two branches of the Capitalist Party. The 2008 campaign did not have any alternative parties to participate in the debates. The electoral system is controlled by the Republican and Democratic parties. Who else? At this point, Cedric, can't you see that Obama is a mouthpiece for the ruling elite? Come on, smell the coffee. That's Ronald Crenshaw. from Brooklyn. He wrote me a letter. This is called It's All Right. It's all right to disagree with me. Mr. Crenshaw, I didn't understand many of your points. I gotta be honest. But I agree with a lot of what you said. It's all right. I can't say that I'm not sure of the point of the letter in every respect, but I thank Ronald for writing it. He says I didn't mention Obama's facilitation of Bush's programs, TARP and TALF, but I did do that in another blog called Securitization and Satan. He says I'm blaming the victim. Black leadership does not wield enough power to achieve their goals. If Cedric looked closer, he would see that no citizen group sets policy in this country, only the legislature and the executive. Oh, man, I very much disagree with that. There are forces that control the legislature and the executive branch. I mean, for instance, the intelligence agencies can do whatever they want in a certain part of the world to generate an input that will cause a president to make a certain decision. And as for the legislature, he says Cedric goes further in bearing his naivete when he assumes that the Israeli lobby forced the U.S. to do their bidding. One has to take note that the U.S. gives Israel $5 billion a year free. Remember the old saying, he who pays the piper calls the tunes. All I can say, Brother Ronald Crenshaw, is read the book, The Israeli Lobby, and you'll see that that $5 billion is not being made because the U.S. legislature or executive is setting policy. That $5 billion goes to Israel because of the effective lobbying and the control that AIPAC has on Congress. Your logic breaks down in the sense that if Congress had the supreme power, why would they listen to any citizen group? You follow me? So you're suggesting that Congress is telling AIPAC what to do? Doesn't make any sense. Special interests work on Congress, not the other way around. Now, there was a time when the government did support the think tanks and the policy setting community and academia. Hold on. Messing with my 311 album. But, you know, the days of the Defense Department financing the Rand Corporation and all these groups, you know, they kind of ended in the 60s and 70s when those groups got private funding. I like the fact that he wrote me a letter. I think he also posted a comment on my blog at CedricMuhammad.com, which I appreciated. So thank you, Mr. Crenshaw. Now, let me comment on the Obama speech to the Islamic world. If you read my blog, I mean, I'm not going to reread my blog, but I'm essentially saying that there were some things that he said that could be outright challenged, and I did question a few points that he made. But there was a lot in that speech that was unique. And what I'm suggesting that probably Ronald doesn't like is President Obama is not going to sit. See, I think Ronald's problem is that he thinks that the executive has supreme power, or Congress does. So therefore, Obama can just get into office and start reversing things by himself. Doesn't work that way. Presidents have to be forced to do things by effective lobbying from citizen groups, special interest lobbies. And the Muslim world is not a political lobby. It's a potential political force. It may be affecting local elections, but the 7 million Muslims do not vote together. They don't have any issues that they unite on for any extended period of time. The closest thing I ever saw to a Muslim lobby was in the election of Cynthia McKinney, the congressional race in 2004 and 2002. Where a broad cross-section of the Black American and immigrant Muslim community worked together on her behalf. But his speech to me was an opportunity, an opening. He said certain things that if you latched on to, you could use them as the justification to call for a change in American policy. But again, most of the people that I saw watching President Obama's Islamic World address are, again, like Ronald, they expect the executive to be more powerful than the special interests and the powers behind the throne, so to speak, which I think is unrealistic. I think that's a little bit of naivete. So the Muslim world will be out of its mind if it thinks that President Obama is going to change the balance of the Middle East peace process, for instance. He said in the speech, and I critiqued it in my essay, that America has an unbreakable bond with Israel. Well, if a bond is unbreakable, that means a decision has already been made. You can't break something that's unbreakable. Let's get into a little 311. If you have any thoughts on the Obama speech, let me know. To me, it was just him inviting the world to force him to do things that he knows are justified, but he will not do them himself. All right. This is a song called Indian Ink off the 311 album, Uplifter. India Ink.
I write your name on my arm with India Ink, baby. I told you once before, it's not what you think. I drink it in with a sip, but I really want to chug. You know I take what I can get, give me a dub. Now, so good, come on now, I wish you would. Anytime I get together.
Glenn from Philly has seconded my nomination of Bruce from Virginia in the new reconstituted Entrepreneurial Four Horsemen. Kevin from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, he says the international trade and commerce issue of Cuba, Venezuela, and Africa is very interesting, brother. Also, can you tell us, who do not know, the benefits and drawbacks of taking a company public? Well, in my book, I mentioned this little exchange that I had with Bob Johnson of BET. The benefits of taking a company public is you're able to raise a lot more money than you could with a smaller group of investors. So that's why the WWE went public, the New York Yankees went public, I think the Boston Celtics went public. You go public because there's much more money available to you on the stock exchange through investors on places like the stock exchange. If you want to do the markets, if you want to sell a multitude of shares, it just the basic reason is you can raise a lot more money from a lot more different investors, different kinds of investors, bigger pool, bigger volume of money. That's why people go public. The drawback is that you, by selling more ownership, you're giving more ownership away, or control rather, and influence over what is done with the money, the personnel, and the business model of your company. So there's always a balance between ownership and control. Nimba has joined us. He's trying to promote his business. He wants to develop projects in agribusiness in Cote d'Ivoire. He's praising his president. He says that The only leader in Africa who's claiming for the integration of African economies is the president, Gbagbo, I can't say it right, of Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast. Okay. I think Wu-Tang, we made the right decision to go on tour with Rage Against the Machine. 311 was a backup plan. And the Foo Fighters. The Foo Fighters and 311. More people wanted us to go with the Foo Fighters, but we had the same agent as 311. This song right here is called Too Much Too Fast. This is off the new 311 album, Uplifter.
Tell my favorite story.
the Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
It's been a long time, oh, such a long time.
311. I like the influences on their music. You can pick up a lot of different things, hip hop, reggae, even some jazz, big band stuff, but not hard enough. I like my rock a little harder, you know what I mean? But that's cool though.
We unreal that human web just to see how it feels. Too much too fast for the moment to last. I tumble to you while stumbling through. How do I get my head up off the tracks? Listening for
this song is called Two Drops in the Ocean. I like the diversity of the album. Song placement is on point. 311 Uplifter. Two Drops.
Thinking of you, it all comes in.
Little U2 feel with the reverb on the guitar. Spatial Dimension.
Two drops in the ocean. Two drops in the ocean. You are part of me, the other side of the sea.
Oceans apart, but I know no one else will do. Two drops in the ocean, just go with the motion, dear. We'll meet again. From
you
two
are
rivers.
Tuned into the Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.